Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Howdy, Tiger fans. We recorded a podcast. It was actually last week, and Colin's been riding my ass to get this thing up. But I've been traveling for work, and little Chase and little Daniel have been a pain in my ass, so it's taken a while. But luckily, there hasn't been much news that has dropped since we recorded, so pretty much everything we've said holds true and is pretty much up to speed. The only thing is we've just lost more men's basketball games, but that's to no one's surprise. Anyway, hope you enjoy the podcast. We'll be out with some more soon, and M-I-Z.
Gonna throw it. Slam. This bug's for you, Mizzou.
They are carving up this LSU defense.
They don't get no better than that, man.
Now Cook's gonna throw the deep ball, and Burton's past the defense. Touchdown, Luther Burton. 47 yards.
Kick is up. It is. Yes. Oh, a walk-off winner from 61. Harrison Meadus.
This is the Mazodcast.
Howdy, Tiger fans. Welcome to the Mazodcast. I'm your host, Brendan Anthony. Joining me, as always, is my longtime brother, Colin Anthony.
What's up, dum-dums?
Well, it's Colin, it's been a long time since we've potted, but I think it's definitely enough news to generate a show, don't you?
Certainly.
I think where we should start with Mizzou is without an athletic director, and I don't think anybody saw that coming.
No, who needs one? You know what? This is another situation where gets me aggravated with the press. One of them even basically addressed it in their show, but it's like, well, we knew things were kind of choppy. We didn't report any of it, but now that the story has broken and she's no longer worth us, we can tell you that, yeah, things have been stewing for a bit. I'm like, wow, thanks for the info. As always, journalism excellence.
There's two parts to this story at this point. I mean, everybody knows Desiree Reed-Francois is no longer with us and is now in Arizona. So there's the how did that happen and why did that happen? And then there, of course, is the who the fuck's going to take her place storyline. So let's start out with talking about why she's gone. You know, I think everybody in Mizzou world, for the most part, felt like Desiree Reed-Francois was doing a pretty good job. You know, we just won ourselves a Cotton Bowl, 11-2, great football. I mean, Dennis Gates, her big hire, is coming off a shitty basketball season, but he had a great season out of the gate, and he's got good recruits coming in. So I think it's way too early to say that that hire wasn't good. She's got a new baseball coach who only now is starting his job. Those are the two big things she's done other than rack in a huge $62 million gift to the university and then done a lot to improve the fan experience and the football game, certainly. So, I mean, by and large, things seem to be on the up and up. Everybody's getting extensions. Mizzou's looking good. And then she's out the door. And after she was out the door, as you mentioned, that's when the stories start piling up that, the curators have been meddling in her business a lot, and boy, there's some curators that certainly didn't like her, and they did this oversight committee, and that's pretty much just overlooking her job and micromanaging. So how much of it was the micromanaging? How much of it was stuff we don't know? I mean, it's certainly, I'll tell you what it wasn't. Arizona was an awesome, he couldn't turn down. I mean,
no, I mean, she went to a worse school for worse money.
That's right. Within a worse situation. I mean, Arizona is deep in debt. They just fired their athletic director after just hiring a football coach, which is a tough spot to be in. So this was a jump ship situation. And then, of course, there's the question about her buyout. Will Mizzou pay it or won't they? I mean, look, this board of curators is the same one that meddled in the affairs of Jim Stark and ended up hiring Eli Drinkwitz, which I think at this point, everybody's like, okay, that worked out, you know?
Well, I think that's what's happened, Brennan. I think it's a twofold problem. One, are the curators a bunch of meddling dicks who probably have those positions for the wrong reasons? Yes. But they've also made some decisions that have worked out. So they're like, they feel emboldened, but they've got to know that what they're doing is micromanaging. Like that committee, how could it be interpreted by anyone in her position but someone just directly looking over her shoulder on every decision she's made? I think, like I said, the curators made a couple of decisions, like with Drinkwitz, that have worked out, and now they're putting their thumb way too much on the scale. And that's going to be, it's not just bad to lose somebody like Desiree Reed Francois. It also looks bad when you're trying to hire somebody else. Like, go to Mizzou, a bunch of the governor's cronies are going to be on the curators. They're going to be up your fucking ass the entire time. Enjoy the job.
Well, you know,
I mean, at least, I mean, that's a very reductive way to look at it, but it smells like that a little bit from what we know.
Well, and it is always easier to see in hindsight. I mean, you talk about where was the reporting. Certainly, this oversight committee was reported, but it wasn't talked about as it being any big deal. There was also talk about the fact that there was supposed to be this big grand plan to basically completely overhaul all of Mizzou athletics facilities. And then when the news came out about what it might be, it was reduced to a north end zone renovation, which was far less expansive than, you know, they were talking about a new baseball stadium and all kinds of things that would tie into campus more. And then it's just the north end zone. So it's like, there's a question of why. And I do wonder, like, she's been throwing money around and talking about throwing more money around. Is the money drying up? Well, I don't know. We just
got $62 million.
Yeah.
Now, granted, that probably, you had told me off the show that that money probably comes regardless of Renee Reed. I mean, you know, the season that they have had and the circumstances being with it, that money probably didn't have a direct correlation to her necessarily, but she's who's in charge when it comes in. So she's who gets the credit.
Yeah, that's right. That's the way it works. And then going back to the Eli Drinkwitz hire and how the board basically hired him, a lot of people said, well, maybe Drinkwitz and her didn't get along. I mean, the board also pushed through his extension a year ago.
Yes.
And the word is that she was on the fence about it, and they said, you got to do it. And
I mean, imagine being in that position. Imagine it's your job. I think a lot of people are being a little bit sympathetic to the curators in this instance, but I'm like, they hired her to do that job. I mean, your job, whatever it may be listening right now, if your boss just came in and just, you know, reversed your decision or made your decision for you, like, what are you paying me for? You know, like, you're just going to do the hiring around me. But I bet Drinkwitz probably didn't show a lot of respect. She didn't hire him. And then she was the only person not on board with his raise. So why would Drinkwitz be motivated to be her friend or ally in any of this?
Of course, he said all the right things after she left, as you might expect him to. Why would you rock the boat further? But, I mean, golly, he's on his third AD now, and he hasn't been here all that long. Yeah.
He's the de facto AD because the curators, the meddling curators, hired him. Like, he knows he's untouchable because he didn't get hired by an AD. He got hired by the curators. You know, the curators literally went to interview him, which is not common practice. You know, he probably doesn't feel like he answers to an AD, especially when he's on his third one.
But it leads us to the next question of who are we going to get? You know, and you alluded to it, Colin. There are a lot of things that make a potential athletic director say, I don't know if this is the right spot for me. Certainly, you know, football rules all, and it is becoming a Power 2 league. You know, the Big 10 or the Big 12, the ACC, and the now defunct Pac-12 are just not factors. It's the Big 10 and it's the SEC. Mizzou is an SEC school. There are going to be people who want this job. But between Mac Rhodes and now Desiree Reed-Francois, you've got two people who left an SEC job to take a position which could be argued is in a worse spot. Certainly Arizona and probably Baylor.
Well, Baylor was going – remember what Baylor was going through when he went and took that job? I mean, it was not a desirable job. I mean, from the outside looking in, just what data we have to sort of work with, it seems like – our board is pretty interventionist, and no one likes that. No one wants, no one would be happy in that situation for very long. The problem is, are the curators going to double down, or are they going to be like, hey, maybe we need to take a step back. Maybe we are over. I mean, that's very self effacing. And I'm not sure the curators are that type of people. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like most of these people were success in some other forum, certainly not education or administration of an educational university or an education or something. They're people who made a lot of money and made the right friends and then get appointed to this board of curators. But so I just don't know if they're going to say, hey, we're part of the problem. And that's my concern. It's like, because if the curators aren't going to change, then any AD you bring in here is going to have to operate under these same constraints. And it's such an incredibly small universe. You know, we may not know who the AD candidates all are. You know, they're not names we know until they get hired. But ADs know who they are. Other boards of curators, I mean, this is the world they live in. And it's an incredibly small world on that level, I think. And I think Mizzou is going to certainly, if they haven't already, are going to garner a reputation for being a difficult board of curators to work for.
Yeah. Oh, I think that toothpaste has left the tube already. So surely the decision will come before too long, because you don't want this leadership position to be empty for a very long time, especially coming into a football season where people have a lot of high hopes. So you don't want it to be.
It's the worst time for this crap.
Yeah.
Well, imagine being an AD of a program that is, being picked by lots of people to go to the first college football playoff and saying, I don't want that job anymore. In the SEC. It's crazy when you really think about it.
I wonder what's going to happen. Like Robin Pinchton, everybody's been talking. You know, the women's basketball team has been terrible. And they've been bad for a long time. And it was just a matter of time before they fired her. I mean, the writing was on the wall. If the Desiree Reed-Francois situation had never happened, she was getting fired. What happens now? There's no one really to fire. Do the curators fire the women's basketball coach? Because that seems really in the weeds to be running the organization.
Yeah.
Like firing the
women's and again, coach. That's what
but
I'm saying.
Somebody's got to do it.
The other thing is you're going to be late to the party when you go out into the market to hire a coach. You know, if they do fire Pinchton after they get a new AD, well, who are you going to get? All the best candidates have already signed up to a job.
Yeah,
you know it's
well, Colin,
terrible.
You're the person I would come to say who are the best potential candidates for women's basketball coaching.
I appreciate that, Brennan. I appreciate that.
It's, yeah, I know you are up on that all the time.
Sure. But I don't know. As long as the football team wins football games, at the end of the day, I don't think anybody truly cares. It's just when it starts to bleed into things, that's when people are going to get upset. It's hard to again. I think it's hard for the curators to see themselves having fault in this, because the coach they hired over the judgment of the last AD, just won 11 games and is seems to have the train on the tracks. I mean, I think Renee Reed-Francois sort of inherited a bad situation, like even worse than it's normal. You know, maybe the last AD hired the football coach, but it's even worse when the football coach was hired by the curators. Like, they're not getting fired. It's a strange situation to be in.
Well, the basketball situation on the men's side of things, obviously
that's not helping.
No, they lost again tonight, 83-74 to Florida. They're now 8-20, and Colin, they have, they're not going to win a SEC conference game. And midway through the season, it was, they were playing really bad, and people would say, I don't know if they can win a game. And then, much as always happens, people were like, oh, they're going to win a conference game. You don't know ball. You don't know ball. You know, you say, well, this is a Kim Anderson bad season. And one of the things I hate about Twitter is I have put a number of times on Twitter slash X that this is a Kim Anderson bad year. When you put that, people are like, he's a better coach than Kim Anderson. Let me tell you all the reasons why he's a better coach than Kim Anderson. I'm like, okay, I'm not disagreeing with you. I said this year is a Kim Anderson bad year. That doesn't mean that Dennis Gates won't be great next year. It doesn't mean that he wasn't great. I mean, his first season already exceeds anything Kim Anderson already done. There's no argument there, but Twitter's too stupid to parse two different things. So they've won eight fucking games. This is as bad as it can get. This is as bad of a basketball team as Missouri can put on the fucking floor.
You know what aggravates me about all this is that Gates made it sound like, oh, we've got big things coming. You know, I don't know what he's supposed to say, but he certainly didn't try to temper enthusiasm. No. And then they go out there and they're just bad and undersized. And
well, and then people will say, well, you know, we, two of our best players were hurt and didn't play this year. I'm like, yeah, that's true. That certainly would have helped to have two of your best players play. But shit happens every year to every team. And it's one thing to not be as good as you could have been. It's another to win eight fucking games.
Yeah, that's a different thing.
Stop with the excuses. At some point, you just have to stop with the excuses. Because even if they're good excuses, that's eight fucking games with zero wins in conference. I don't care. At the end of the day, his job is to put the best product on the court that he can. And even if two of his best players are not available, he also recruited 10 other players and then
win 12 games.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, eight games is pretty bad.
Let's get into double digit and then start making your excuses. I mean, if we miss out on the NCAA tournament or even the NIT by a couple of games, okay. Yeah. Sorry we didn't have those players. We could have maybe done something then, but we won eight fucking games. So shut up. Don't make excuses. You can like Dennis Gates. I like Dennis Gates. I'm not of the camp that a lot of people are on. It's like, he forgot how to coach this year. He's a terrible coach. No, I don't think that's the case. I think he, if he has a good roster, we've seen with a good roster that Dennis Gates can have success. We have seen it. So I don't believe that. But I will say that the new recruits coming in, they damn well better work out, because if anything, if 2024-25 is anything like this season, Dennis Gates is already in a lot of trouble, because this is utterly unacceptable. And people checked out. People were so into basketball after last year. People got so much on board. That arena was full. And through big parts of this season, the arena filled up. But they did everything they could to make sure that you did not care about Mizzou basketball this year. And they were wildly successful at that.
Yeah. It's hard to, I think, when people, you know, have that attitude of like, this is the most Mizzou thing ever. This is what they're talking about. It's like, hey, train's back on the tracks. Basketball team's good again, guys. It's going to be a lot of fun. And then immediately, not only did they not have a good season the following season, they win eight games.
Yeah.
I'm like, if Mizzou truly is cursed, you know, that's pretty Mizzou.
It's a weird position.
Pretty on brand.
It's a weird position to be in rolling into March, where we beat Ohio State for a Cotton Bowl win, 11 win season for football, you know, picked to be sixth or seventh in the SEC East and having this great year, coming off an NCAA tournament win the following year in basketball. And not only does the basketball team absolutely implode, but our new athletic director, who everybody likes, abandons ship. And I will say this too, Colin, because a lot of people like Desiree Reed Francois, and I think she did a good job too. But whatever the circumstances are, I'm not as fast as some people are to maybe just forgive her for abandoning ship at the first sign of trouble, because that is what she did. She bailed on us. She may have had good reason to bail on us, but she certainly bailed on us. And so, like, you know, I just don't know that everybody in all parties were in good. I just don't think there was a white hat and a black hat in this scenario. I think there are shades of gray. And I still think, as the situation rolls out, we'll find out more about turmoil within the athletic department, probably not in the press, probably on some message board somewhere. And then the mm-hmm. press 5 years down the road will confirm or deny. But anyway, we're kind of in a troubled spot compared to where we were just a couple of months ago. Well, and then you tack on top of that, Drinkwitz losing his defense, his star defensive coordinator, and taking guys with him. You know, we've had a tough couple of months.
Yeah, I think it's sort of in line with what everybody's dealing with right now, though. Everybody's having to watch players come and go. You know, Alabama's going through it right now. I think, you know, college football's just changed, and it's a much more, I don't know, it's a much more living, breathing thing. It moves and it changes, and I don't know, you've got to be a counterpuncher almost. And I think that Durinkowitz is doing as good a job as anybody can hope. I mean, the Desiree Reed Francois thing is sort of outside of his control. He's, you know, brought in recruits. He's losing a lot, though. You know, I saw the day that Ennis Rakestraw and Darius Robinson both have first round grades. You know, that's two first round draft picks on your defense that are missing. And I know that there's guys behind those guys looking for opportunities and to make an impact. But, you know, losing two first round picks is hard. And plus, you think about Hopper, you know, yeah. who's going to, he may not be a first rounder, but he is going to be probably in the first three rounds. That's a linebacker. I mean, that's a lot to lose. Not to mention Tris Abrams-Drain, who, though he doesn't have a first round grade, is definitely getting drafted. So you're getting in probably in the first three rounds. So you've got, you know, at least four guys on your defense that are going to probably go in the first three rounds of the NFL draft, and that is a lot to lose.
Yeah, it sure is. And on top of everything, Colin, the thicker kicker.
Yeah, and I mean, and you know, and he's probably not going to get drafted, but yeah. he was definitely a weapon for this football team. You know, he had a big a leg as you can hope for in a college football player. And yeah. And he may end up on an NFL roster. I don't. Maybe he will. Maybe you know, he's not going to be drafted, so you can't count him among that probably. But he's definitely something that is not going to be all that easy to replace. And I don't want to be the guy, you know, raining on everybody's parade, because I do think Mizzou's got a good chance as anybody to make the playoffs. But we're losing some very, you know, big gears in this machine.
Oh, our All-American running back is gone.
Yeah, you know, so now granted, there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic, but, and I am optimistic, but I also don't want everybody to be just like, oh, it's a given. It's a foregone conclusion. We're just going to wreck everybody and go to the playoffs.
Yeah.
Like there's going to be, have to be some players that we don't know their names right now that are going to have to step up in a big way.
Well, and then on top of everything else, our backup quarterback, Sam Horn, is now having Tommy John surgery, and he will not be playing next year. So we're going to be in the quarterback market again. And we've just been getting hit sucker punch left and right with bad news for a while. And it, you know, it can drag on you for a little bit. But like you said, Colin, there is still a lot of talent on this team, and people, the expectations are, it is going to be different. We're going to lose a lot of players. I feel like we're losing more players this year than we lost last year when people had lower expectations. And on top of that, the schedule is not going to be any joke. It's going to be a tough schedule. It is not a given that we will make the playoffs. But you're coming off of the season looking at what the talent we had did and what Coach Drinkwitz was able to do with them. And you have to be optimistic and excited about the prospects of making a 12-team playoff. But it's going to be a very different looking football team than we saw last year. And so, you know, spring football is now underway. Drinkwitz likes to get these spring games in super, super early compared to where they used to be. We'll see. We got, I think, 8 early enrollees on this new football team. So we're going to have some new faces to look at. And the transfer portal obviously has transformed college football, where you can plug and play people like you never could before. So, and Drinkwitz seems to know how to use the portal. Both him and Gates in the past have known how to use the portal. I shouldn't say Gates now after the season we've had, because if he couldn't use the portal this year, fuck. I mean, he did not assemble a group of players who knew how to make baskets and stop other people from making baskets. But Drinkwitz has effectively filled gaps with the portal. So it's...
Well, and I don't think, and it, as much as it's, I hate that Sam Horn is hurt, you know, I think that after last season, you know, Brady Cook is the undisputed heavyweight champion of this football team. And, you know, barring injury, Sam Horn was going to ride Pine. So, now if Cook gets hurt, that's a different story. But as of right now, I mean, not having Sam Horn, if everything goes to plan for Mizzou, will affect them none.
No, that's right. Yeah. If we have a healthy Brady Cook, and we all know the man has a tough heart, then Sam can just recoup.
Brendan, you mentioned like Robin Pinston is, heads on the block.
Yeah.
How bad are the women this year? I'm not ashamed to admit that I haven't paid an ounce of attention.
Well, they're bad. I mean, Mizzou men's basketball is worse. I'll say that.
It's hard to be worse than Mizzou men's basketball.
Yeah. I mean, look, Mizzou women's basketball has never
raped by a hobo. That's worse than our basketball men's basketball team, but just barely.
That's the one thing is being raped by a hobo.
Yeah. Just a homeless guy all hopped up on some sort of like biker meth.
Yeah. Basketball.
That guy just giving it to you in a truck stop bathroom. You can smell the skillet scramble from the restaurant, mere feet away from the shower you're being violated in.
Yeah. And but bathtub gin on his breath.
Yeah.
Breathing it's so listen, ears.
Yeah. His hot breath on your neck. Objectively is worse than our basketball team, but not by much.
Not by as much as you'd want it to be.
No, not by nearly as much.
Women's basketball is not that bad, but it's not good. They've never recovered from the loss of the mayor, Sophie Cunningham. And just, it doesn't seem like Robin Pinchton's the answer there. And it kind of sucks because this is an era where women's basketball is really taking off, Colin. I mean, like, the schools that are good, that you can fill an arena. And it makes me wonder because, like, Mizzou gymnastics has gotten good, that's a program that we pay precious little attention to, given the fact that our sister was actually on that Mizzou gymnastics team at one point. But they're good now, and they fill up fucking Hearn Center. I still think they rope off the top deck, but, like, I often wonder for these sort of Olympic sports and women's sports and, the non-men's basketball, men's football sports, how much of a crowd do you have to consistently bring in before you're suddenly a revenue sport? Like when Tennessee was good at women's basketball and South Carolina being good at women's basketball and they fill up the arena, like, is that paying the bills or is that still being subsidized by?
I don't know. I mean, you got the Hearn Center staff, which I mean, every person who runs a business knows the biggest overhead is pay. So you got to pay the coach, you got to pay the assistants, you got to pay the trainers, you got to pay the person that fucking sells the popcorn. I don't know. Does that belong to the Hearn Center or the athletic department or is there some sort of, I don't know how it works.
I don't either.
But you'd have to make a lot of money just to cover the overhead for, the scholarships. I guess the scholarships don't go out of that, but certainly the pay, if you're going to get a top level coach, I bet a good coach at almost any of those sports eats up a huge amount of any revenue you're going to have.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to sell concessions when you have a full crowd. I don't know if, the women's
basketball. I wonder how that split is, though.
Yeah, and I don't know how much they make on a lot of garden salads and wine spritzers in the concessions of the women's games. But, I mean.
Misogyny.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, at some point, you're helping to pay your own freight a little bit, But I mean,
for sure.
Nobody expects them to is the thing. And like women's gymnastics, first of all, you're not paying the women's gymnastics coach what you're paying like Dennis Gates, right?
Not even close.
And so,
but there's a market rate for them too. And I bet it can be high enough to really eat into any profit you're seeing from attendance.
Yeah. But I mean, fill it up over the course of a season and it's at least offset the cost. I don't know. But like, the women's basketball team is bad, and it's a shame that they are so bad because it is an era where, the games get televised on the SEC network and teams that are good draw a crowd. There is a crowd. There's a market for women's games.
Brennan.
A lot of people who go. Yeah.
How about men's baseball just started? Any buzz around the team this year?
Well, I mean, I think there's obviously buzz around the new coach. They started off with some wins. I think they finally took a couple on the chin lately. They lost their home opener, sadly, against, I think, SEMO, which is not a great start.
Doesn't sound great.
No, but, you know, it's also, you know, been 75 degrees in February, which is always an obstacle in Missouri to get people excited about college baseball whenever you have to sit on frozen fucking aluminum bleachers. So having good weather has got to be helpful. I don't know. I wish the new guy all the luck in the world, but if there was one area where Missouri has not competed in the SEC, it is a baseball. And part of that is the fact that this athletic department has never invested in baseball and shown no interest in doing so. But the rest of this conference does. And, you know, maybe that's weather related. Maybe it's because they actually can bring people into a baseball stadium in February when we can't. But I don't know. I love going to Mizzou baseball games. I feel like it is one of the last realms of college athletics still being college athletics, you know, like.
Yeah. And cheap, you know, get in cheap.
Yeah,
you know, affordable concessions.
Take your kid.
Yeah.
The baseball team will sign their little baseball or their hat. Mm-hmm. And let them run around the bases and stuff. It is just not like football games where everything's off limits and the coaches
and media. It's become very much a pro sport.
Yeah. And in the college baseball world is not that. It's very approachable. So I always wish Mizzou would be good because I do remember the Max Scherzer years and it was a lot of fun. But
do you remember going to the baseball game last year and being pretty convinced the guy next to us had figured out who we were?
Oh yeah. It's like he was giving us the side eye, like, those are the podcast guys.
I think I hear them talking and their voices sound very
that's funny. Right. Yeah. He was close enough to hear us talking, and maybe it's our own narcissism, but I was pretty sure.
Yeah, probably that.
Yeah. Or maybe where we were in a giant hat that had neon lights that said Mazodcast.
Yeah. Yeah. And I had painful diarrhea and gas that night too, so it might have been that, but anyway.
And it reverberates on those aluminum bleachers.
Sure.
Oh yeah.
But anyway, that was really fun. My son came with us, and you can just drink an affordable beer and sit in good seats and see a great game. Like, it really is for the expense is a really cool thing for anybody who's in the local area.
Oh, the enjoyment.
Like, if you're looking for something to do with your son, like just a cool experience, a father son dad thing, you know, take him to a Mizzou baseball game. Like, you'll never get away cheaper with something that your kid's going to remember.
Yeah, the enjoyment per dollar spent ratio is really good,
astronomically good.
And it's good baseball, you know. Even when Missouri's not good, they're playing the top teams in the SEC.
Yeah.
You know, it's sad to me that we can't even afford to, like, put AstroTurf on the entire goddamn field. We have to do it piecemeal in the outfield and the infield. Mm-hmm. But it would be – I do wonder, like, if Missouri invested in a new ballpark, like, in a different spot, because that is the windiest place in Boone County.
On top. Sure.
Windy Hill. If they put together, like a really cool-looking minor league-style ballpark.
Like downtown.
Oh, God, can you imagine? They'll never do it. I mean, I think if even when they were talking about putting a new ballpark in, it was going to be eating up more parking at Hearn Center like they did for the softball field. But
God, the university needs to buy that. I don't know what is even there anymore. I don't go ever that part of town anymore. But there used to be just like an old like shopping center, and like had to be closed down. Like, there was like a seamstress shop in it. Like, there was just,
oh, yeah,
was just,
yeah, like, where the Office Depot was and everything.
Yeah. And it was like, man, the university just needs to fucking open the coffers and buy that whole block and put just a downtown stadium right there.
Yeah. I do wonder. I mean, it seems like you could draw a crowd.
If you put it downtown, it would become a thing, you know, where you could walk from the bar where you were eating your, you know, hamburger and drinking your beer. You know what I mean? You go to billiards, you have a burger and some beers, maybe play a game of pool. Hey, the game's about to start. Let's walk over to the park.
Yeah. They'll never do it because of the expense. But since we do have to play in the cold, like, God, if there was like some sort of dome or some sort of.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's what ballpark villages in St. Louis, essentially.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I do wonder, like, they could install some sort of outdoor heaters or something, because what they really need for the fan experience for baseball is some sort of heating. You know what I mean? Like, that's what keeps me away. Like, I would be at the first game of the season every year if I knew I wasn't going to freeze my fucking ass off, you know?
Yeah, I'm same way. But it's
when the weather's nice, it is the best. I mean,
yeah, it really is. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Enough tugging off baseball, Brennan.
Yeah. Wrestling's good. Gymnastics is good. Basketball, women's basketball, bad. Yeah. You know,
men's basketball, bad. Men's football, good.
Good.
Yeah. Which is, you know, what we're here for.
That's right. At the end of the day,
the rest of it's gravy.
Yeah, we're at that time of year, Colin, where if there is football news, it's bad news, you know.
Exactly.
Uh-oh, what's the law involved with here?
Yeah.
But so I guess it's good that things are quiet, but it doesn't make for great pod.
Well, I'll tell you what, Brennan, the last thing before we sort of wrap this up is there maybe a little bit of a douche of the week just in general for like college coaches. Like, I've seen a lot of stuff online about college coaches being disgruntled with the new way of things. Oh, wait, and they're moving around.
Douche of the week? Is that what you're referring to?
Yes. And of all people, I saw Jay Billisley being like, what are they talking about? Like, they have these contracts. They have no trouble breaking these contracts to make more money. Like, they have they're running the business of free agency. Like, I cannot believe the pushback from coaches that now the players who are adults, legal adults who can go fight in a war for our country, you know, are now, you know, using their own leverage to make money. And, you know, I'm assuming contracts are what's going to come next, because they are going to have to figure out a way to sort of put a saddle on this wild horse that is NIL. But, you know, I was just like, I can't believe the hypocrisy of these coaches.
Yeah.
You know, being like, well, how dare these kids? There's no loyalty. Like, what loyalty? Like, Blake Baker's loyalty? That kind of, is that the loyalty you're talking about?
Brother for life.
Yeah. The brother, you know, give me a fucking break. Like, it's crazy. And I couldn't agree more. And so I just wanted to all of those old fuddy duddy boomery weirdos who are like, man, these kids, you know, should definitely not be paid. And this is all ruining the sport, which I don't in any way, shape, or form think it is. It could, but it's not yet. So let's not pretend it is.
College football's never been more popular, you know.
Well, and listen, if they don't get some sort of salary cap contract, something figured out, you know, eventually it's going to start shaking out where the deepest pockets win. That's the way professional sports works, kind of. Unless you without salary caps, it's how the Cowboys of the '90s became the Cowboys of the '90s. You know, they just bought all the best players, and then that's why they haven't won a fuck PETA drop since the fucking salary caps existed, because they couldn't just buy all the best players.
They did all this cocaine too.
Yeah, you know, so it's just you have this giant roster bloated with all stars, and you can afford to pay them all because there's no cap, and that could, you know, theoretically ruin college football for anybody that doesn't have deep pockets, but. That hasn't happened yet, and there's no real reason to believe that it will necessarily. You know, I mean, I feel like everybody's going to get a handle on this. I feel like it's just a bunch of people who don't like change. Konzo Martin was a perfect example of that. You know, he basically like, he always with the NIL stuff. He's like, that's not really, I'm the coach. That's not really my thing. And I'm like, no, it's your main thing. I mean, like, I think that was just a complete misevaluation of what was going on in his universe. But anyway, that's all those people are douches. In my opinion,
it's a wide net of douchery, Colin.
Well, it is. I mean, like, it's just like I'll narrow it down to this: coaches who are mad at players and calling them disloyal for hitting transfer portals.
Douche of the week.
I kind of had an idea, Colin, for a new douche of the week intro. And I've like Mike Steele, if you're listening, maybe you can help us out with this. But you know, the if you watch the movie Ted, was it Flash Gordon? The
the douche.
Biggest douche in the universe.
Yeah, you know, I gotcha.
Something of that nature. Somebody help us with that, put together.
Yeah.
And make drop in a few clips of things TJ Moe has said. Surely we can find something. He said douchey.
He was on the radio for a long time. I don't know if they took him off the air or, I mean, he's probably at this point, he's probably got a show on like the Daily Wire or the Blaze or something like that. But so I don't know. I don't know. I honestly feel like we're almost giving too much oxygen to TJMO.
Well, yeah, we don't want to in any way support or promote anything TJMO does, but I do think he deserves and it should be honored with the namesake of Douche of the Week.
Obviously.
So I wouldn't mind having a proper theme song for TJMO Douche of the Week. All right, Colin, let's wrap this thing up and come at the listeners with some more hot takes from Nerding Out, maybe coming up.
Yeah, we should do that. I'm gonna go see Dune 2 this weekend with a friend, and I love. Well, maybe we can do a Nerding Out about the Doom series. You've seen the first one, part of it, till you fell asleep, which is something you can do during that show. Right. That movie a little bit if you're not fully vested.
Yeah, but I'm going to try to catch Dune 1 before we do that. But yeah, that would be good. And hopefully have some more football talk for you. You know, obviously I've been pumping my book left and right. Was on the Feinbaum show. I don't know if we mentioned that on the show, but was on Paul Feinbaum show to talk about.
Yeah, Brennan spoke to the Paul Feinbaum.
That's right, where he agreed.
That's not the first time, though, Brittany. You got to talk to him once before, like on campus, didn't you?
Yeah, but that wasn't on air on national television.
I know, but I'm just saying, like you, that was not the first time you'd met him.
No, and it was so shocked to find out that he was very much aware of the podcast. But anyway, I was thinking about maybe...
He was.
Yeah. Somehow. But anyway, I was thinking maybe at some point, since it is the off season, I could get one or two of the players who are still alive in their 80s to try to tell their side of the story of that. You know, if anybody's read the book or interested in it, and there has been people who've given me feedback that they're into it, I think that could be
cool. Who was the guy that told you the story about the basketball, the fight against Kansas in a basketball game?
That's a guy named Charlie Hinkey, and he was actually one of the Mizzou basketball players from 1960, not a football player. He was actually one of the guys throwing haymakers in the middle of that basketball game. And that probably – I should have figured out a way to work that into the book a little bit more than I did, but that was crazy. If anybody wants to see, like, the Battle in Brewer or Mizzou-Kansas fight, it was on television. Jack Buck was calling the game. It's wild. And you talk about Mizzou and Kansas fucking hating each other's guts. Like, God bless the good men of the 1960s because they fucking hated Kansas. And there was literally blood on the court. There was a guy named Neil Amder who was a journalist, ended up being a sports editor for the New York Times. But at the time, he was a Mizzou journalism student writing for the Missourian. And he said he remembers it well because he had like blood splattered across his sports coat. And I'm like, yeah, that's good stuff.
That's awesome.
That's the kind of stuff that makes me want to write books. So anyway, we'll try to get something like that out for you in the off season. And when there's football news, we'll be coming at you. But till then, M-I-Z.
Z-O-U. Raped by a hobo. That's worse than our men's basketball team. But just barely.